officials from the IEC, the commissioners, you are all welcomed. This morning on Monday, our constituency day actually, but because of the task before us, we had to convene this meeting so that we cover and complete the bill as soon as possible so that it can also go to the NCOP. We have some apologies before us of members, and Honorable Hasibonwe has apologized. She won't be attending. Honorable De Freitas, Honorable Makuba, and Dr. Melder. Those are the apologies that we have received this morning. I'm not sure if it will be necessary for us to make introductions as we are familiar with the IEC delegation, or rather, let's rather do the introduction so that maybe we refresh our minds. My name is Maggie Maunye, a member of the Portfolio Committee. On my right, it's Mr. Adam Salmon, our researcher. On the left, it's Mr. Eddie Matonzi, who's our committee secretary. And we have Nandipa, who's also assisting Eddie with the admin work. Per, let's start with you.
Morning, everyone. My name is Per Peterson, a member of this portfolio committee. Thank you.
Very good morning to everyone. My name is Masizole Masela, a member of this committee.
Morning, Andre Gaum. I'm the ANC's whip on the committee.
I'm Graham McIntosh, and I'm a member of the committee.
Thank you, honourable members, and we have honourable Nokaya Mnisi, who has just joined us also. She's a member of the committee. And at this time, let's start with you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm Sai Mamabulu. I work at the Electoral Commission in Centurion.
Norman de Plessis.
Renee Talliot, one of the commissioners of the IEC.
Mbongani Finna, one of the commissioners.
Good morning, Chairperson and members. Musotho Moebia from the Electoral Commission.
Good morning, Theatre Civil Major, Legal Services of Home Affairs.
Good morning, I'm Sugiso Adams, Legal Services from Home Affairs.
Good morning, Moses Malakate, also from the Department of Home Affairs Legal Services.
Thank you, officials from our department and also the commissioners. And Bakulus Jablela Ubano Ubabufina, I think it's the first time that I see you in this committee, if I'm not mistaken. The second. Okay. Today we'll be dealing with the response from the IEC with regard to the submissions that were made by the NGOs, the Ubuntu Center, AfriForum, Commission on Gender Equality. There's Mr. Itumeleng, who has also made a submission, a written one, Mr. Red Haynes, and the South African Catholic Bishop. Those are the submissions. Okay.
I wasn't sure where to bring this up, and we can deal with the end. But my concern is twofold. One is we have received a very impressive and a very efficient list of meetings for the third and fourth quarter, and we're obviously you're going to make us work very hard, which is fine. That's what we pay to do. And the other question is, I noticed in the ATC in Parliament that the public protectors report on the procurement of premises in Centurion by the Electoral Commission is before the Speaker and will now presumably come before a committee of this House. I'm concerned to basically know about our timetable. I don't want to go into the merits of it, although I did do some weekend reading on the public protector's situation or opinion. And could we perhaps get some indication, either at the end of the meeting, what our program's going to look like, and obviously whether this committee will, as it were, put on a different suit and then go and deal with this report from the public protector. Thank you.
Okay, let's start with the last one. The report of the public protector. I think on Thursday there was an indication by the chief whip in the plenary that there's going to be an ad hoc committee that is going to deal with that report. So that one is out of Home Affairs hands, because there's going to be an ad hoc committee that is going to deal with that report. The issue of the program, I think I will continue with our fourth term program as is, because that one will not be coming before the portfolio committee. And the editor has a copy of the fourth term program. I'm sure you will offer that to him. Okay. Okay, then over to the IEC to make their responses to the issues that were presented to the committee.
Madam Chair, I've been asked by my colleague just to kindly introduce the CEO and to just hand over to him to do the submissions and the response to the submissions.
And also my apology that I forgot to afford you the opportunity to introduce yourself. Did we do that? Oh, okay. Oh, yeah, no, it's Monday, I'm still at home. Okay, over to you, Commissioner Talia.
Chair, I have not have much to say other than that I'm handing over to the CEO just to give the IEC's responses to the submissions.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Commissioner Talliard. Good morning, members. We thank you for the opportunity to present these responses. We had received a total of six submissions made to the Portfolio Committee. Three of these were presented in the Portfolio Committee on the 10th of September, and we had a further submission on the 12th of September, bringing the total number of submissions that we had received to seven. We identify those as Ubuntu Center, the AfriForum, Commission on Gender Equality, Mr. Itumeleng Musi, who is the coordinator of the disabled in Gautrewe District, John Gautrewe District, a submission from Mr. Red Haynes, the Parliamentary Liaison Office of the South African Catholics Bishop Conference, and the submission that we received from Deputy Minister Bohopani Zulu. We submit the responses in terms of the category that relate to items in the bill, starting with the definition. Concerning the definition, it was the South African Catholic Bishops' Conference that raised an issue on the clarity of the identity card, and they wanted to know if the Greenbaum coded identity document would be available and usable for these elections. The response really is that that document will be used, and we have confirmed that situation with the Department of Home Affairs. It will remain a competent form of identity for purposes of registration and voting. With respect to the registration of voters, we received from Ubuntu Center issues relating to concerns surrounding the way in which we may be discriminating against persons with psychosocial disabilities and those who are detained under the Mental Health Act, in that the chief electoral officer may not be registering those persons persons in those categories. They argue that this is in conflict with the Constitution and the UN Convention on the Rights of People with Disabilities. They also indicate that the Mental Health Act has been superseded by the Mental Health Care Act of 2002, which provides that mental health users have this right in the Constitution. In that regard also, the SACBC and AfriForum made submissions in which they welcome the creation of the international segment of the voters' roll for accommodating citizens who are ordinarily resident outside of the Republic. In responding to this, we looked at other jurisdictions and what their situations are. And we found that in many jurisdictions, in the U.S. in particular, out of the 44 states, out of the 50 states, 44 do not permit persons with mental disabilities to register as voters due to concerns about faculties to form informed opinions. We looked at Europe. Out of 27 of those European countries, only 9 allow this situation or such persons to register and to vote. In the South African system, the chief electoral officer may not register a person if such a person has been declared by a high court to be of an unsound mind. We are also excluded the exclusion further extends to situations where persons are detained under the Mental Health Care Act. The exclusion is not arbitrary, therefore, and it's not automatic. It's not arbitrary, but also we don't apply it without due regard to this loss. This exclusion come into operation at the instance of a court and after examining medical evidence presented before it. And therefore we submit that when persons do in fact come to us, there are persons who are not in those facilities or detained accordingly. With regards to the nomination of candidates, the Commission on Gender Equality made the submission and proposed that Section 27 of the Act, which is the Electoral Act 73 of 1998, which lists names of candidates accordingly. They are saying that this list must be constituted by names of women and men who alternate, in that the number of women and men on the list must not differ by more than one. Essentially, this means that you would have a woman and a man, a woman and a man, and it's typically known as the zebra system in the nation. They further submit that possible sanctions for non-compliance could include the seat remaining vacant or reduced allocations on party funding as well as fines. They also provide that the chief electoral officer must return a party list of candidates if it does not comply with the quota and zebra principles, allowing the party an opportunity to correct the list. Finally say, failing such arrangements, we need to be disqualifying the party's consent. They also say that the CEO may object to non-compliance to the Commission by a date to be established in the election timetable. This does mean that we have to include in the election timetable a day for such an objection, which currently does not exist. and presumably the Commission would have to decide on such an objection. Our response, we submit that it is common cause that constitutionally and through other legislative instruments, the rights of women must be advanced, and we as the Electoral Commission support that principle. The proposals of the Commission on Gender Equality are noted as necessary to ameliorate the country's history of patriarchal relations. However, it is important that consensus be reached with political parties before such quotas are in fact enforced or applied in our law. At the moment, there is no such mechanism in our law. This, in our view, requires a national policy which must be decided by parties in Parliament. The impact of this proposal will entail the need for an extended election timetable. Normally, our election timetable really ranges between just about 70 to 90 days, and if these provisions were to be taken into account, we will certainly need more time in that election timetable. The other issue that was raised was the rights of prisoners to vote, and this really was just a submission from the Catholic Bishops Conference welcoming the amendments that we make. And we accept that, as this is a matter that was dealt with very clearly by the Constitutional Court. We also received submissions on special votes. AfriForum indicated that they welcomed the proposed dispensation allowing all registered citizens abroad to vote in elections of the National Assembly. They indicated that they recognized the complexity of the provision of a ballot in the elections of provincial legislatures, but also that that citizens who are ordinarily resident do not have properties in the Republic, while some have multiple properties in provinces. AfriForum notes that whilst present challenges for registered voters to travel to missions of the Republic abroad is difficult, they accept that the principle of using home territory is sound. In other words, where they use those missions is sound. The Catholic Bishops' Conference also welcomes the proposed dispensation on special votes for citizens outside of the Republic. However, they are concerned about the provincial ballot, and they argue that sufficient time between now and the elections is required to make the preparations for this provincial ballot. Deputy Minister Bohopane Zulu raises the issue of whether the visually impaired would be allowed to use the universal ballot template during special voting processes at home or in the offices of the presiding officer while retaining the possibility of assistance of a person of their choice for this purpose. And lastly, Mr. Itumeleng Musi is requesting that a database of persons using Braille in John Hautewe District be created as they are neglected. These were the submissions that we received, and briefly in terms of their relation to the special votes. Our submission is that the mixed reaction to the issue of provincial ballot is really indicative of the inherent complexity in this matter. The supreme consideration in this matter is the right that's not alienable and the need for us to maintain the integrity of the elections. The matter is here, we are dealing with it here, but also it is before the Western Cape High Court where it will be fully explored. The use of the universal ballot template in both voting stations and during special voting days will be reinforced. We do have that, and we will reinforce that use. And the intended amendments will be made to the regulations. The possibility of bringing in a person for assistance if desired for purposes of voting is retained as part of Section 39(2) of the Electoral Act, and therefore deals with the issue the Deputy Minister has raised. Our outreach division is continually in consultation with the disability sector for purposes of making improvements to our electoral processes and accommodating their needs. And this is a situation that before every election we spend time dealing with. With respect to Mr. Musi, we will have interactions with persons with visual impairments in his district, and we will deal with the issues that he is raising. Mr. Red Haynes raises the issue of e-voting and is proposing that the proposed bill does not include provisions for electronic voting technology, despite other countries, including Namibia, adopting the use of such technology. Members will recall that earlier this year we had a conference in the city dealing with this aspect, where all stakeholders were invited, and we explored the matter in detail. Members will recall that we also had countries that have just adopted that technology, others that had adopted but had moved away from it, and yet others that are using that technology, all of them providing us with insights. And accordingly, we took a view that this matter still needs a lot of exploration on our part. Those were the submissions we have considered. Chairperson, if I may just raise two issues in terms of the bill that, you know, have been raised in the interactions that we have had. There are two issues really. One referring to considerations that have been made in more than one paragraph of the bill or clause of the bill. And this relates to provisions that we have made in section, I think it's 36. Yeah. I just want to check. Yes. It's clause 6. Where we deal with amendments to 33(3), that amendment is covered elsewhere, and we submit that if it pleases the House, and we need to deal with it, we can deal with it by noting that in 33(3), under 6. Of the bill, we may in fact want to consider removing it if you so wish, Chairperson. The second issue, really, it's an issue that relates to clause 33(4). In that clause, the old clause provision was made. A proviso was made for the Commission to make special arrangements for military personnel serving in that capacity, and it does appear that accidentally that clause, that proviso, has been removed from this clause, and the persons dealing with military personnel on Friday did in fact raise that issue, and I thought I should submit it to members. I don't know if there's anything that I have missed out, which I need to. 33(A). Yes, sorry. Thank you very much. 33(A), Chairperson. The proviso under 3 is similar to the proviso I raised under clause 6, which has 33(3) as well. In truth, that provision, if it pleases the House, we can also impute, because it is provided for elsewhere. I thank you very much, and our submission ends there. Thank you very much.
CEO, if you could just repeat the 33A and the other one on military. Is it on the bill or where?
Let me get a copy of the bill, Chairperson. I'm sorry, I'm taking the time. Got the electronic. On the bill, sorry, whilst you get that, let me deal with the last one. The last one is easier before I get to the bill. The military provision, Chairperson, the provision that we are noting is that under 33.4. We are making provision. We say in an election of the National Assembly, the Commission must allow a person who is outside of the Republic to apply for and cast a special vote if that person's name appears on the segment of the voter's roll for persons who are in the Republic, if that person notifies the Commission within 15 days after the proclamation of the date of that election, of his or her intention to vote outside of the Republic. And we are submitting, Chairperson, in the past, the military personnel serving outside of the Republic were provided for in here, and they noticed that provision is not expressed, implicitly included in here. And they had indicated that it is important because we do have and we will always have the category of such persons. And we are submitting that, if it is placed in this House, we could insert that proviso right at the end that says, provided that the Commission may make special arrangements for military personnel serving in that capacity, outside the Republic serving in that capacity. I make that submission because, the military raised the matter with us on Friday.
I think that will be proper if there's that insertion.
Yeah.
On behalf of the members of the Portfolio Committee, I think that will be proper. We agree, honorable members. The insertion of the military, honorable Marcella.
Morning again to the Commission and the CEO. My question is simply on the fact that this arrangement is done for people by the IEC who will be outside, obviously, both on provincial and national ballot. Is that what you're going to do?
The section that I was relating to deals with the elections of the National Assembly. You member would recall that in the elections, provision is made for elections of the National Assembly and elections of the provincial legislatures.
So here we are dealing with the military voting at national.
In the provision. Of the National Assembly.
Not the province.
Yes.
Thank you. Honourable Gum, Honourable McIntosh.
I just want to ask, thank you, Chair, whether you can make this submission that you've made to us electronically available to us and send it to Eddie so that he can distribute it, please.
That's the insertion of the what we've been talking about, the military.
Not only, the submission they've made this morning in terms of their reaction to the submissions we had.
I thought we have the response. Mr. the military is not there. That's why they're saying they're proposing that. Honorable McIntosh?
Madam Chair, I don't know if the department or the commission supplied its mind as to where they want to insert. Is that going to then be 33A1C, an amendment there to include that? Because there is security service in connection with the election, or is it going to be or members of the armed forces serving outside of the country? If we can just get clarity on that, I don't have a problem with that. I mean, we have nearly 10,000 soldiers, I think, or members of our defense force serving elsewhere in the world at the moment, and particularly in Africa. So I think it's quite reasonable that these people should be able to vote if they want to.
CEO?
The provision that we have with members of security services serving here, it's fine. It's members of security services who are not serving in the country. That's what we're making provision for, who are not in the country. Those that are in the country are covered. Thank you very much.
Are you with us, Honorable McIntosh?
Madam Chair, no, I'm perfectly with us. I do think, though, one's got to understand that if you're going to get people voting in Kivu, for example, or in Juba, or Mogadishu, you've got to create an infrastructure to enable them to vote, and that does have implications.
But those people are there because of a service that they are supposed to provide, and they were sent there by the government. I think it will be proper that they be also allowed to cast their vote on that particular day. I'm not sure. Okay. Are we together, Honourable Members? Any more questions from the members, actually?
No, sorry. The only one that I would like to be clear with us is that the submission that they intend to make over and above certain sections of Section 33, which we are seeing before us, that it be provided to us in writing. Was not part of what they submitted.
Dr. Melder, and also the issue of the 33A, that the CEO, if you could maybe elaborate on that as well, because we were a bit lost when you were dealing with 33A. Dr. Melder, before, can you ask Dr. Melder also to pose this question?
We have been in discussions with the Department of Home Affairs on the issue of documents outside, and I'm just looking at my colleagues if there has been any development. I thought they had indicated that South Africans can be verified, but I'm not sure to what extent that verification would be, because we do need the documents.
Home Affairs is next to your CEO.
I think they can clarify the issue of whether those who have traveled and who are abroad can apply at the mission for a copy of either an ID or a temporary identity certificate.
Thank you, Chair. With your permission, I think the a person who's outside the country and doesn't have an identity book, we could do verifications at the mission as indicated. They could check their passports with the ID number or the ID number, then they'll check on the population register to check if indeed this person is still is a South African. I think we can work out the mechanism if they don't have a copy of the ID with themselves besides the original ID. So means could be made to ease the process in that regard. Thank you.
Yes, the ID number is in the passport.
The verification is one thing, but will such a person have some document in their hands to say, well, here's my passport, here's a document that says I'm verified, and now I can register? You need to sort that out.
Thanks, Chair.
Before you deliver, Michelle, let me take a few hands, and then you'll respond to the end. Honorable Maduna Peterson, followed by Honorable Gam. Honorable Marcella, you'll be the last.
Thank you, Chair. Mine is just also a follow-up question from the Deputy Minister from Women, Children, People with Disabilities. If this voting template by VIPs, if it exists in the previous act, I just need clarity on that.
Can we first deal with this issue of the ID passport first before we go to other? You'll come later with your question. We are dealing with this issue of ID passport. Honourable members. Honourable Dam.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. And I think that is quite a good point, because the passport is a valid form of identifying someone. So I would tend to say, without having consulted with my colleagues and so on, but would tend to say that the mechanism should be as easy as possible to allow them, even if they don't have their ID there, you know, to use the passport to get the temporary document, whatever the case may be, but an easy mechanism of some sorts. Secondly, I just want to, I mean, it wasn't that clear for me from the IEC's original submission, and I forget now what the Act says. I know that the position of the IEC, and as indicated in this bill, is that you vote at the mission. Is the idea also that you register at the mission, or is there some other form of registration? Thanks.
Salo, I thought when one has a passport, because you use passport as a positive identification, it is a legal document. That it will be made as easier and as free as possible, the vote for any individual to exercise their right to do so. But obviously without compromising the quality of that process. My other hope was that when IEC comes, they will say, no, we have considered to give them a provisional vote as well. So I thought that was a gift in a wrap.
Honourable, may I get the response from either Tate Mamabolo or Tate Moetle?
Chairperson, I will. The registration is meant to happen at South African missions. In those countries that we have those missions. I think that's the one that I wanted to respond to. I don't know if there's anyone that Sai or Norman want to deal with that I have omitted.
Thanks, Chairperson. The universal ballot template was used in the 2011 municipal elections, and the intention is that we must reinforce its usage in the voting process. So through the by amending the elections regulations, which is why we are saying we will reinforce that by amending the regulations, and it will be used both in during special votes as well as on voting day.
Madam Chair, just to remind my colleagues in the administration, there was an outstanding question on the registration for South Africans living abroad. I know that this matter was also discussed on Wednesday in the EMC, the processes around registration. That was a specific question that was not replied to. I'm not sure whether the CEO is taking it or whether the DCO is taking it, but I don't want us to lose sight of Advocate Gam's question.
I thought the question that Advocate Gam asked was whether registration will happen at missions, and the CEO indicated that indeed it will be so.
There was also a discussion just on whether it would happen electronically. I think there was a question around that as well.
The modalities of how that registration will work have not been considered by the Commission. So that is a matter that is still under consideration.
Advocate Sibili Mecha.
Thank you, Chair. I think as Advocate Gam has indicated, the process should be made more easier to ensure that if you don't have an identity document, you'll still be able to be verified. And where necessary, and or if you've got a copy, you should be able to indicate that indeed this is the person who's holding this ID number, the passport. Thank you.
Thank you. We are passing the issue of the ID and the passport. Honorable Madonna Peterson, you may raise your question.
No, I just wanted clarity on this question, that at what stage would the IEC conclude on the process of registration for people living abroad, on the modality of the actual registration process? Because the current status now is that it is still under discussion. So it would be very much important for us to know at what stage would that be resolved. And how do you think the easier process will be, as long as we know that it must be within the law of the country?
If I may, Madam Chair, I suspect that I may have just perhaps jumped to the gun slightly, in the sense that the Commission is meeting on Friday, and these issues were discussed and canvassed at the EMC meeting this past week. So I want to give the Honourable Member the reassurance that the Commission is obviously prioritizing this matter. It is on our agenda for our upcoming meeting on Friday.
Are you okay? Honorable Mason? Okay. Okay, Honorable Peterson Maduna. Can we have more questions of clarity from honourable members regarding the the response of the IEC?
I've actually hopped in and out at some stages during the meeting. My question is: has it been responded to the concern from the disabled people, I mean the mentally impaired people, unstaffed, yes. Because one of the challenges, I mean, it's easier to respond, but then when we had a presentation here, it was a mind-blowing exercise. Yeah, and it was quite a deliberate, it was quite a serious matter to deliberate on. And I'm not sure how you have responded to it. I don't wish to bring the meeting back, as long as you are satisfied, say that it was responded to. Because the one area there was the current situation now, there's no one with the statistics of how many people who are in that position, who in fact have been declared that you can't vote because of their status of the mind. We need to know how many and what are the situation now, because there's been a concern that please bring them back to the voters' roll or allow them to vote. Because even if we have that statistics, but there are others who have not been brought before the court who are living in the community. So are you not discriminating between the two? The one that has not been to court and the one that has been declared by the court. And it's something that really was quite a serious debate at that time. But I think if you have time, obviously, to tell us the statistics, and unless you want to expatiate on the response.
Yeah, I think that one we really need to apply our minds on, because we do not want to discriminate against our people. We want to assist actually the people with who are mentally disturbed. How can we deal with this kind of situation? Whether to we allow them? If we allow them, do we bring in the courts, or how should we handle that? Maybe you have, if you have made research from other countries like Ntatemoyepe you've mentioned, but how is it handled with other, from other countries? But before you respond, Honorable Gam.
Yes, also on that point, what harm would it now do just to drop that provision from the relevant legislation and to allow, you know, everyone who, and I think that was what was indicated by the people making the submission, that you know, if someone makes the effort if someone makes the effort to pitch up at a voting station, declaring the will to vote, why shouldn't we just allow them? People who are really completely, you know, having quite the episode or whatever that they would most probably not even pitch up. I mean, we're talking here about people with all kinds of disabilities. For example, we are talking about it's only people who've been declared by the High Court. But I mean, is that now an appropriate? Or criteria that it has to be declared by the High Court. What about a clinical psychiatrist that has basically declared someone to be bipolar, whatever the case may be? They go on medicine. They pitch up at the voting station completely in control of their faculties. You know, why do we make that kind of distinction? Is it really not for us to perhaps take the lead in the world? Even though all these states in America has this provision still on their statutes, and even though in Europe many countries are doing what they are doing, there are 9 countries, whatever you mentioned, that have actually in Europe, for example, that have actually taken this off their statute books. We've always been the people who take the lead as far as these matters are concerned worldwide. Is it really worthwhile to have this potentially unfairly discriminatory provision on our statute books anymore?
Dr. Milner?
Yes, Chairperson. If we disallow people with bipolar disorder, we will probably take a third of the voters' roll, perhaps, with all due respect. No, all I'm saying is that I think the current provision makes sense. The court won't easily pronounce somebody unsound of mind. There's a huge process that the court will go through. There are curators and people with all kinds of reports, and it's only in extreme cases that will happen. And that's the reason why it's been done in that way, and I would support that as it is.
Chairperson, I wanted to indicate that in practice, persons that come to a registration station and submit their registration, we do not have disqualify them from registering, And when persons come to vote, we do not disqualify them if they come. And I think what the Honourable Member has indicated is that these are persons that have come to the station, and therefore we, you know, we see them face to face and we help them there. We have not gone to institutions, and if the House is saying that we must go to institutions, it's a different matter. You know, we have not gone to institutions, but as it is, we have not turned anyone back because they have come, and we think without having had a certificate or anything of the sort declared. I don't know if, you know, yes, Commissioner.
Chair, I think the difficulty that one has is that one has to take cognizance of the very real fact that there may be, by virtue of the finding of the High Court, diminished legal capacity in all aspects, whether that is to contract, whether that is to transact, whether that is to vote. And I think that is where the difficulty arises. And it is true, as Advocate Gahm says, that that may objectively constitute a distinction that is being drawn, but the issue that will arise, as it arises every single time, with relation to aspects of limitation of rights, not only on this issue in the legislation, but also on other issues, is whether that is a reasonable limitation. And I think that is certainly the issue that is going to arise with this matter as well, given that there is diminished legal capacity. But that is certainly an issue that needs to be debated by the House, as the House has debated other areas of the limitation of rights on this legislation.
Yes, thank you, Chair. I think that the point is, and I'm not, it's not a formal position of my party or anything like that, I'm just canvassing the issue. The point is that you are actually telling us that you are not enforcing that provision. I don't think there's one person here who asks you to go to institutions or whatever the case may be. But you're not enforcing it. So if people come and present themselves to vote at the voting station and have all the documents in order or to register, you allow them to register and vote. So in view of that then, what purpose does this provision serve for the IEC's purposes and for our electoral purposes really remaining on the statute book? It doesn't seem to serve any purpose anyway, so why do we just not remove it? I'm not going into the debate now whether it's a reasonable limitation or whatever. That's a different argument that I'm sure can be argued. As the Honourable Mulder pointed out, you know, maybe if a court then declares someone as being with an unsound bond, it is a justifiable limitation, maybe, but you're not enforcing the provision as it stands that Ubuntu asks us to remove. And that is the point. Why, in view of that, how would it help you to keep that provision on the statute books?
Chairperson, I'll start off with a lighter note here. Say we're in a meeting here, we have to make a decision. Then I have proof that one of the members has been declared by the court, even though afterwards the person was fine. And the person didn't apply to court to get that removed. Now that the member be removed from this House because he has been declared before, which is that then the person, wherever the decisions have been made with his or her presence, those decisions are null and void. That is what we are saying here. That you can say by virtue of 10 votes that have been received, one person who has given majority to the one who has won has been declared to be mentally unsound. And then the one who has duly been elected is actually unconstitutionally elected. So we need to take the matter back to court and back to the decision-making body. So that is literally the implication of this. So to avoid IEC to be embarking on litigation cases that is unnecessary and costly for the state, let us remove this thing. Look at it, and I think the best way is for you to remove it, then, because there are people that we know, Twangamageza, that's why they call them, Twangamageza, and they call them names. But what we know is that they go to public meetings, they vote. When they say, they raise their hands. So that is my view, and I just wish that we could look into this seriously.
A very good point, Chair.
Before you come in, Dr. Melder had his hand up.
My maybe I should hear what that Rikot Gam says before I reply. Thank you, sir.
I think it's a very good point that the Honourable Mtasela has actually made now. I haven't even thought of that. And that is that the election at a certain voting station, for example, the elections that took place there, if I know of someone who's been declared of answer online and that one has voted, what is the implications for the outcome of that election at that voting station? What is the implications if this thing remains on the statute book for example, a councillor in a municipal election where in that municipal election someone shouldn't have been allowed to vote, but this one councillor is now elected to be the ward councillor. And now I can prove that someone has been declared of unsound mind by a court, and I go to court and I say, review and set aside this election on that basis, you know. What are these kinds of implications? So it is more of a hassle to keep the thing on the statute books than to remove it, it seems to me.
And the implication then would be that such a person could also be elected to become a member of parliament. You do not allow people who are insolvent to become members of parliament, but people who may be of unsound mind declared by the court we want to elect as members. I think it's not that simple. If we ask how can we assist the IEC in this process, the question could then be if there are no such provision, then an application could be made or pressure could be brought to the IEC to go to all these institutions and allow people like in prisons to vote.
Commissioner Finn.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. I am not a constitutional expert, but it looks like this is embedded in the Constitution of the Republic. I've just casually gone through on the electronic copy here. It's actually embedded that a person who has been declared to be of unsound mind by a court of the Republic cannot, there are many things that are excluded, and it looks like it's embedded in the Constitution of the Republic, which is outside our control as the Electoral Commission.
The reality of the issue is that the IEC cannot make a determination in this regard, and we do not have the means to make such a determination, which is why it's left to the courts. And courts won't come to such a declaration without having canvassed proper medical evidence to reach that conclusion. So, if a person presents, it is not for the IEC to make an inquiry as to whether a person has bipolar or not, or whether they are experiencing a lucid interval. But if a person is concerned that this person has so been declared by a court, having canvassed medical evidence, then it's for them to raise an objection in terms of Section 15 of the Electoral Act. And to the question that has been raised about the implications for an election of a ward, for instance, if a person who's been declared, the reality is that materiality would have to be assessed. I mean, the impact of one person where a party wins by 20 votes. You've got to look at how material that is. So it's just not purely a numbers game, but it's really to make an assessment about how material that vote was on the outcome of that election.
Madam Chair, if I also may add, I think that the issue that arises also is the fact that many individuals who may have been declared thus by a court may be detained in medical facilities and may not have the freedom of movement to even exercise the right to vote. So we also need to think of the practicalities, because when the CEO highlighted that the national question that would arise is the House saying we should also go to mental institutions, that is the practical reality why we may need to retain the provision. Because frankly, this is also a very real issue. People who have been certified according to relevant medical interventions and then certified by courts to be not of sound mind would be incarcerated in a medical facility would not have freedom of movement and therefore would not even be in a space where they would necessarily be registering or voting. So the merit in retaining the provision is actually to deal with a very practical reality that this may also be the case.
Do we agree with the Commissioner?
No, I don't agree. I'm going to investigate this matter because fortunately we still have to deliberate at the later stage and Parliament then us will vote. They will not be present. My view is that we've said freely and openly, and I think with a voice of unanimity, that let us agree that everyone in prisons must vote. And people have been charged, you know, and convicted on serious grounds, including murder, rape, you know, and even mutilating people's body parts. And those are very serious issues. And they vote, you know. They elect us as we're sitting there. Now, this is a matter of either one is discriminated against, especially if a person now walks out of that captive area. What do you do now if that person was not removed? So I think that is the element. You're not saying a person that is kept there under supervision. I mean, those issues are understandable. But now a person has walked out and has voted to elect my opponent in an election. And then that was a deciding vote. We have municipalities, for instance, that are high municipalities, where there is sometimes 10 members, the majority is 50 plus 1. So if that person decides to take a holiday, no decisions will be taken. Unless you call that person and say, "Now please, I will pay for your holiday." You have so many things that are happening. And you call them different names, especially in some provinces. In fact, we have some here. In the Western Cape somewhere, you know. And then the municipalities will not function. Now, in this case, if a person has evidence that this person, in fact, who has won or who voted for me to lose, you know, people, when they lose, they do all sorts of things. We will see when you lose, you start feeling that, yeah. But the reality is those who win, they will never feel the effect of it. Until you lose. And we don't want a situation where we don't interrogate this particular aspect and look at it, you know, in all ways. And that is my view, that we need to really look at the way in which we can try and mitigate against potential election flow in this case.
Okay. We are continuing. Where are we? We are still on questions for clarity. The theme we have had earlier on referred us to 33A. I'm not sure if we did complete the 33A because I thought I didn't understand.
Chairperson, I thought that the House agreed that we submit in writing to indicate where we had made provision for it, and we will do so.
Any more comments? On the e-voting, the Zebra system. The Zebra system, I'm sure that one will be. We can leave that to political parties to deal with, and also to politicians to either legislate or leave it as is currently. We are in agreement that that one we are leaving out.
No, I think we just passed the ball, Madam Chair, very sensible.
And the e-voting system, it's one of the submissions. Members,
Yeah, no, I think it is our conclusion that still more work needs to be done in this regard. There was this conference that took place that we participated in. It is an area we definitely have to look into, but not really at this juncture. Thanks.
We are in agreement with regard to the e-voting system. Okay. We go to other submissions, AfriForum submissions.
It doesn't appear that AfriForum has actually suggested anything new. They've basically agreed with what has been proposed, and we welcome their submission, but I don't think it's really, you know, they left open this whole idea of whether people should have a provincial vote as well or not when they're abroad and so on. They didn't take a very strong position or position on that matter. So I think as far as that is concerned, we are happy with their submission, and we, you know, it's basically a condemnation of the proposals that have been made. Thanks.
Yes, I agree, Chairperson. I would say they did not necessarily leave the provincial question open. I would rather say they said that it won't be practical, and I would support them in that, to have a provincial vote for people abroad.
Person, that we are aware of the one point of disagreement between some of the parties here, which is the whether there should also be a provincial vote for those voting elsewhere in the country and not in the province on voting day, as well as whether there should be a provincial vote for South Africans living abroad. I think there's also a bit of a point coming from the DA side about the whether you should be allowed to vote and register more broadly than only admissions. But I think as far as the other points are concerned, except I think it seems that the DA is still thinking about this whole matter of the psychosocial disabilities, whether there should be an amendment in that regard. But I think on the other points we are in agreement to a very large extent, and maybe it's a good opportunity now to adjourn to and then to give political parties the opportunity to take final positions on these matters or to get inputs from their parties. And then when we return tomorrow, if the Honourable Casella would agree, and if we return tomorrow, you know, we are in a position to put forward more final party positions. There isn't a very large area of disagreement as far as it seems to be.
Honourable Dr. Miller.
Thank you, Chairperson. I would agree with Advocate Gong. I've got just one small problem. I don't know if the IEC and the commissioners will be with us tomorrow again. The point I would like to make is that I find it a bit difficult, the position we are in at the moment, with the court application brought by the DA. I would thought that the DA would come to the committee and bring their proposals in front of this committee so that we know what they are saying. And if we hear what they are saying in terms of how they see that the provincial vote should take place in the for the international vote, as I might call it that, I would also love to hear the IEC's response, if that is possible, and how will that impact on the whole process abroad. But now we don't have that. So it's really going to be difficult. I don't know if we're going to be in a better position tomorrow. I'm not sure.
Yeah, it is a bit dicey situation. investigation, because the matter on the other hand is before the court. You don't know whether should we continue talking about it, or we'll be told that no, you can't continue, it's before the court. I don't know. But I think we will continue, you know. The IEC, I'm sure, will be here tomorrow, and the commissioner. We expect that you are going to be with us the whole week, because we want to finish with the bill this week. Thank you. I'm sure they will be here, Doctor, tomorrow, up till the end of the deliberations. And Honorable Marcella?
Thank you, Chairperson. I, out of my own volition, I've tried to engage with the Honorable Member from the Freedom Fund Plus, Honorable Malte. And I would have thought that, Doctor, you have really enjoyed that deliberation for myself and the advice on this particular one. But I would say that the first meeting with the IEC, where they were tabling this bill before the committee, was the discussion that ensued around this one. So anyone who needs to know our position, we have deliberated on this that day. We have engaged. But the IEC's position that time, hence I think I would be worried now why the IEC would say, in fact they are not saying, I think why some of us would say as members here, why is 30A in court? It's because the IEC gave us no other options. In fact, even the members of the ruling party in the committee were clear that we'll never allow that. And we're politicians, so we know that even if you start arguing on a bill, we've dealt with many legislation, pieces of legislation, yeah, and none of the legislations that we've disagreed on, we've ever agreed later in this committee. We've realized that when we disagree on a particular section, it's a party position, and that becomes a very difficult one to test. Unless you would have committed yourself that you want to go and engage and persuade the party in question, which really objected to our position. Our view are still open, Madam Chair, to engage on this matter. If we agree, I mean the court case will be removed from court, because there is no court case, then when we agree. But the reason why there is a court case is because there are some fundamental differences in the approach, especially when it comes to looking at people being given a ballot, and then when you say that you're giving them a second ballot on the same election, people say, ah, it's too much now. But that is where the problem is. Even the security forces, when they go outside, you should give them the vote of their province, because they come from a particular address from a province. And it's not a mammoth task, as people would love to put it. So I think that is an argument which is a no argument. When I look at it in many sides, but I think to be respectful to those who are putting it, let's continue to argue. Let's continue to advance our position, and then we'll take it from there. But the sooner the court pronounces, I think that is the sooner we can conclude on this matter. And we're hoping that the court will grant us an opportunity to do it sooner rather than later, Madam Chair. Thank you very much. Sorry, Chairperson. The other aspect that we have brought forward is that also South Africans who are within the borders of the country, who happen to be traveling within the country, who also would love to have their provincial vote. You know, we have had so many instances where people say, I would wish to vote, but I'm from Limpopo, I'm from Eastern Cape, I'm here now. How can it be done? So I think as long as people, you know, the only thing that is required, Mr. CEO, because I see that you sometimes nod your head and shake it. So let me just keep it standstill, that perhaps what you could do through your chair, that's like it is done now. You announced, the president announced the election, that the particular date is the day of the election. Now, 15 days, really, within 15 days, as long as people use that privilege to apply, to indicate that, you know,
I'm moving to Gauteng, by the way. On the election day, I will be there. I've got a holiday there. People are tourists within the country. You must not make this assumption that tourists is only leave their own country. We have so many tourists. I came as a tourist and I ended up staying here in this province, like other people who happen to have done the same. So my view is that just look at it in that way, that as long as people apply and get approved, they can only go to that station where they have been allocated their paper. So you're not going to have multiple ballot papers being distributed to all of these stations, as the argument was from one of the commissioners. That argument was not a valid argument, because it creates an assumption that you're going to double the number of ballot papers, and that is not the case. Still the same people, but then you'll be able to say the person is voting in Makaza, Ward 96, in that station at Desmond Tutu, that's where I vote. So if I'm not there, I'm going to enter and vote in that school, in Tuna Secondary School. So you send my ballot paper there. And you'll find that there are also enough ballot papers, by the way, given the percentage threshold that you print. So, Che, I'm saying that we are still going to do clause by clause, and at that time, I just wish that when we vote, we just say no need to vote. We all agree. But then we just need to make sure that we are within the law and we can persuade each other enough to protect the integrity of the election. And no one could say, I have not been given a fair chance to vote.
Thank you. Honorable Gama, I note you.
Thank you, Chair. Honorable Mkhwasela has put me in a position where unfortunately I have to put the record straight now. We are in a unique situation here because we are dealing with a bill. It's not legislation. We're still in the process. At the point where the DA took this matter to court, we were actually very early in that process. We haven't even heard the submissions at that point in time. And to conclude that the at any point in time, especially at the point where the DA took this matter to court, even now, before we have concluded deliberations, that the IEC and the majority party and so on have made up their minds, and that justifies a court application at this stage, is simply something that we cannot agree with. We have declared from the outset it was clear that the process is open, our minds are open, we can be convinced to change our minds. But I think the problem is that instead of making use of the parliamentary process, coming to this committee with specific submissions from the DA side and indicating to us how it would be made practical and how it would work to allow people these provincial votes as well abroad and in South Africa, when they're outside their provinces, instead of doing that, the DA is going to court. So maybe what I would like to and that almost amounts like trying to ask a court to make legislation for our country. Instead of allowing the legislation to be made and then challenging it, if the DA chooses to do so, the DA is actually asking the court to make the legislation for the country. So maybe the DA can give us an indication whether you are going to make proposals to this committee trying to convince us on the basis of those specific proposals that it would be practicable to allow South Africans living abroad to have a provincial vote, to allow people who are South Africans who are outside their provinces to have a provincial vote. Are you going to make use of the parliamentary process or not? Because it seems that you are not doing that.
Yeah. Honorable Dr. Milner, followed by Honorable McIntosh.
Yes, thank you, Chairperson. This debate is getting rather interesting. Now, I want to react to what my colleague from the DA basically did just now. He did exactly what I hoped he would do. He motivated why people should be allowed to vote in different provinces, even though they are not there. But the practical problem is this matter is now in front of the court. All I'm trying to say is this. If the Parliament's legal department is not involved yet, I think they should get involved immediately and clarify for us the legal position if we go through with this process regarding, even though there are this court application. I don't want us to complete the process and Parliament to debate this issue, and then that becomes a legal problem again afterwards, the way that we process the bill. So we really need some assistance in that regard as well to have clarity in this, as far as I'm concerned. Thank you.
Honourable McIntosh.
Madam Chair, what I'm concerned about is we're dealing with an amendment bill. What's now happening is that all kinds of other things are being tagged on. An example was the Gender Commission's presentation. It was very interesting, but we were actually dealing with an amendment bill, an amending bill. So, and that's what's before us as a committee, Madam Chair. But now we've just had a very interesting debate, and as some American judge said, but you South Africans love to go to court. And in many cases, we've got institutions which are meant to resolve issues, including the parliamentary issue, and then we end up going to court. That's a whole debate. But I think that Honourable Mulder raises the point. What is the status of our amendment bill in relation to provincial issues? Because that is before the committee. I mean, that is on the amendment bill. We're not going to have provinces theoretically voting and so on. Now, and I think the AFRI Forum has made a case where they say it's just not practical. Now, to me, I think that is the issue before us, Madam Chair, as a committee. We're looking at an amendment bill that deals with the question of provinces. And I personally, have a challenge for us. Not personally, I mean as a politician, as a member of Parliament. I've got a problem if I'm brought to Parliament and I try to work hard to make our laws work, and then we have people rushing off to the courts all the time before we've even gone through the process. And it's not just somebody, it's the official opposition which is resorting to this tactic. And that creates even more problems just at a practical level for us as MPs, apart from where do we stand legally. If there's a thing being in the courts and we've got to try to make a decision on an amendment, and as I think Arnold Gowan said, we've got an open mind in it. I mean, if somebody can come and prove that it's practical and the IEC says, look, we can do it, maybe not in 2014, but there's no reason why we shouldn't do it in 2019, then we can process it. But now we've got a dragon in the room in the form of this court case, and it makes me nervous as a member of this committee.
Honourable Salo,
it's unfortunate that some fell for the temptation to debate the court matter. It's unfortunate, let me reiterate, it's unfortunate because this whole discussion on the actual amendment of this particular bill is an anecdote of the argument that we have advanced in this parliament as the official opposition. Yes, official opposition. We have said through a private member's bill that was submitted by Honorable Jamester, who was given time by this committee to come and argue his case. And in fact, he took time to come and argue his case here. And we listened to him. He then left. We deliberated. I remember I was in Zimbabwe and the committee discussed these issues. Now, where did that bill land? In the dustbin? Because the same majority party failed to engage on that bill objectively. Because there's been this assumption that if you are outside the country, you are a TA voter. It's nonsense. People who are outside the country belong to COPE, belong to FF Plus, belong to the ANC, belong to the TA, and the list goes on, even the IFP, if I didn't mention your party.
know that they are also your voters. The point that we are making is not being, is not losing confidence in the parliament process. Please, that is not the case. But we are saying that perhaps we need to be true to ourselves, that this process was not going to allow us to advance effectively, because there has been some preconceived ideas on our bill, on our proposed argument, that let us not allow this thing to go because the DA is trying to do this and that and that, and that is not the case. What we are trying to do is to allow people outside the country, whoever they are, wherever they are, to have their vote, both on the provincial as well as the national vote, as well as people within the country to be able to exercise their vote wherever they are, both on the provincial and national. But if you look at it, that is not so much a difficult thing to do, Jefferson. We just needed to sit down, and I think if the IEC, on the second phase now, because the private members bill was an opportunity for us as legislators to sit down and say, this bill, how do we approach it? But instead, it was thrown out. But the second approach was when this bill came to Parliament, and we said it's a blessing now in disguise. But when we came here, it was clear that people had been very much anti anything that suggests that we should allow democracy to take its course. And for me, I think it would be unfair to start arguing that taking anything to court is not right for a political party. Perhaps you want democracy to work even effectively. But yes, we wish, and I'm saying that to members, I mean Honorable Gam, we never wish to use court to legislate for us, and we would never allow that temptation. And this is not one of them. Ours is to make sure that we can work here as legislators, as members of parliament who have been elected by the populace, to make the laws ourselves. And I just wish that you could say to us, hey, well, let us agree. Because if we agree on this process now, then there is no need for us to continue with the case in court. Because then we agree on principle. But there has been, sometimes you listen to the argument that then you realize that the principle is somehow put us on the wrong direction, that perhaps people don't understand what we are arguing, and yet we have made our case. And if you want us to come back, say, I can do that first thing tomorrow and bring the preservation, then you can tell me that, no, this thing is wrong. But we have not had, you have not given us anything to believe that this committee could be persuaded otherwise. And that is where the problem is. Even on the very first private members bill.
No, but the private members bill had other issues. So that is why we said when we deal with this bill, we can deal with that sections of your private members bill. And that is what we are doing now. We are dealing with the sections of that bill, not the total bill, which was going to affect other areas of the act there. Honorable Gam, honorable.
Thank you, Chairperson. I would suggest, Chairperson, that if one takes a bill of Parliament, which is still a subject of discussion, to court, then it is actually asking the court, as the DA is doing here, to make legislation for Parliament. And it is not taking part, as one should do, in the parliamentary processes that is at stake with regard to this particular electoral amendment bill. We are not debating a court matter, Honorable Kasela. We are debating the matters that are contained in this particular bill. And therefore, I can't see for a moment that we need to be concerned, as the Honorable Mulder seems to suggest now, that we can be concerned at all that there would be some kind of legal implications for finalizing, continuing with this process. It is our constitutional duty in terms of the constitution of our country to make legislation. And that is what we are busy with. Not even the DA is seeking for an order in court to stop this process from continuing. Why are they not doing that? Because no court will stop Parliament from processing its bills. I think their court, the DA's court challenge is premature, but at the same time, not even them are seeking for such an order. So I cannot see that we need to be saying to each other that there are any implications that that challenge has for this process continuing right now. I would just like to remind my honourable friend from the DA, Honourable Ntasela, that even the DA at the time supported the motion of non-desirability as far as the private members' bill was concerned, that that wanted to change our whole electoral system, also wanted to deal with this provincial vote for South Africans living abroad. They supported it. So to come and say to us now that this bill landed in the dustbin and the people's minds were concluded immediately and things like that are simply not correct. You used the words dustbin, that we just threw the bill in the dustbin. Even the DA supported us then, if that is the case, in throwing that bill into the dustbin. Fact is that we're dealing with the process here now. Our minds haven't been completely concluded at all. And we would like the DA to participate in this process and not taking our bills to court before we finalize it. And I think that is what the DA should consider doing, coming here with their arguments and showing us that it would be practicable and so on to allow this provincial vote. And they are not really doing it. They're motivating it sideways but not coming to those practical implications. Make use of the parliamentary process and be a Democrat. Make use of that. Don't run to the courts now to interfere in processes that haven't been concluded. Please.
Dr. Milner.
Listen, I'll be brief. I'm happy that Advocate Gom has given us the legal advice to say that we shouldn't worry about the court procedure. I hope that we will, that will be out in the end as well. These things tend to sometimes work out differently. For my colleague from the DA to say that if we agree to what they are proposing, the court application will go away. To me, that sounds like blackmail. And I don't think the committee should be blackmailed in any way. You know, there was a time some years ago when South Africans abroad could not vote. And the arguments that you are putting forward, I put forward in that committee then. The chairperson was Mr. Chauke. And it was heated exchanges, and in the end, I lost those debates. And the bill was made, became an act without that provision. Then we went to court. And then the court said, yes, it should be allowed. And that is why we've got this bill before us today. So all I'm saying is that I don't think we should do it that way around. I think we should continue with our process. I'm concerned about the rules of the House that says that things and matters in front of the court cannot be discussed or debated in the House. There's such a rule in our rules in the House. And that's why I would like still to have some legal advice from the Parliament's legal staff, just to give some clarity. But I think the DA should, and I'm not the judge, but I think you should save money and withdraw that case ASAP.
Yeah. Honourable members, I'm sure we are going to adjourn this meeting and we go back to our parties and deliberate and debate through parties so that tomorrow when we come back, and then because you are going to now start being serious on the issues that are before us. I notice the hand of Reverend Finger.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm sorry to interrupt you. You indicated earlier that you have an expectation that we should be here tomorrow and until Wednesday. And we have the same understanding from our side. I don't know whether we've got your permission to reduce our delegation. There are people who have to attend to some urgent matters, especially relating to the by-election in Tlokwe. And we would request that you allow us to be a reduced delegation tomorrow.
No, I think that is allowed, but we do expect part of the delegation to remain so that we are together when we deal with the legislation, with the deal up till Wednesday or Thursday, because I'm sure the matter will be before Parliament on Thursday. Yeah. Honourable members, I'm sure you will
are adjourning our meeting till tomorrow morning. Is it 9:30? 9 o'clock. Okay. So we'll be deliberating on the bill again tomorrow, 9 o'clock. Not 9:30 tomorrow. It's 9 o'clock tomorrow. Thank you very much, honorable members. The meeting is adjourned.